Good evening. It's 9 o'clock on Sunday, the 9th of May. Time for Beyond Belief. Good evening. I'm Stephen Fletcher, and you're very welcome to Beyond Belief. This week we have a combined show for you, with each of the regular presenters contributing to the programme. Joanne O'Brien reports on the Blessing for All Young People, which is being organised by the Diocese of Killaloe. Father Brendan Quinlivan talks to Father Richard Gibbons, the rector of Knock, about their plans to resume public masses and confessions at the Marian Shrine from next Tuesday. And Father Jerry Kenny and myself will talk about the easing of restrictions, both in Ireland and in UK, so that the numbers attending mass and funerals can increase. Also, we look at the importance of streaming services and how people in the UK have been allowed to enjoy a drink or a meal at a pub or restaurant, but only if they're sitting outside and the weather's not been that kind to them. We also remember a world-renowned opera singer with connections to Kilrush, who died recently. All that to come, but we start, as always, with some music. That's the Beatles, Your Mother Should Know. Well, as I said when I introduced the show, we'll be hearing from each of the Beyond Belief presenters this evening, and I'm delighted to say that I've been joined down the line by Father Jerry Kenny. Jerry, it's really good to talk to you again.
And good to chat with you again, Stephen. Everything is going okay here at the moment. I suppose our focus here at the moment is on the fact that some of the restrictions are lifting, particularly from tomorrow onwards in both the business world and also in relation to our attendances at churches.
Yeah.
So that brings a whole new dimension on things and a whole new vista opening up for us. And it's all, I suppose, I think because of of the rollout of the vaccine and the fact that that rollout seems to be going well and coordinated quite well.
Yes.
And I've been lucky myself to have got the first dose of the vaccine in recent weeks as well.
Yes, and that does give you a certain sort of confidence, doesn't it? I think we were talking a couple of weeks ago and I said that I had just had my second jab. So, you know, both Francis and I have had our second jab and we're now seriously looking about when we can book to drive back to Kilrush. And, you know, I'm hoping that very early in June we can start to make the journey back. And, you know, we have to be back in England at the end of July because there's a wedding that we have to go to. And, you know, the only doubt in my mind is, are we going to find that we're going to have to quarantine when we come back to England? You know, it's just stuff like that that is still not clear, is it? But, I mean, the general feeling is one of optimism, I think, you know, judging by what you say. And there is an optimism coming. And there's certainly an optimism here in the UK that I'm sensing as well.
That's very, very true. I suppose the danger, the difficulty for all of us is when we look at our news reports and particularly at what has happened in India. And I read an article there over the week as well. The fear is that if there was to be a similar outbreak that happened in India to happen in some of the countries in Africa, it would be devastating simply because the health systems there would not be robust enough to cater, as has been the case in India with such an outbreak of COVID-19. So hopefully the assistance of the world will come into play. And I know that an awful lot of our own people here in Ireland with connections to India, I've been checking in with some of them to make sure that their own families back home are okay. And I think most of them are. But it's a worrying time, especially when people have been separated from loved ones and families, just keeping in contact and making sure that everybody in their family is safe and well.
Yes. Yes, it is a worry. And it seems only, what, 3 or 4 months ago that we were saying how well India had survived and they were doing so well. And then suddenly we hear about this sudden outbreak, the second wave, which seems to be just devastating, doesn't it? And we've said before that until everyone is vaccinated, then none of us are safe. And that's more and more true, because if it just runs riot through the population, it will have all sorts of variants, which, you know, we'll then have to develop drugs to try and beat. And so it really is so important that nations shouldn't play politics with the supply of these vital vaccines.
And I suppose the other thing, Stephen, is the fact that I suppose it does put a note of caution on reopening, whereby people are going to, hopefully are going to be just, you know, keep up with the caution as well. Just because we have a good rollout of the vaccine doesn't mean we can let everything go back to what it was pre-COVID. You know, we still have to maintain distance and ensure face masks are worn to protect people, because as the authorities are telling us, this virus hasn't gone away. It's a matter of trying to see how we are going to be able to live with it as we move into the future.
Yeah. Yeah, there have been some things that have been able to be opened. There are cafes and restaurants and even pubs which are open, but only if you sit outside. And so there's these pictures we keep seeing every so often in the papers of people, you know, four people sitting around a table holding umbrellas, and the rain is lashing down, but they're there, they're in the rain, they're enjoying their meal, supposedly, and, you know, they're sitting there, a true British spirit sort of thing, you know, they're not going to let a bit of rain put them off, and they're sat there, and I'm afraid I haven't been to a pub for, well, over a year, I suppose, and I can't see it happening. On the 17th of May, you're meant to be able to go into pubs, and we'll see what happens then. But, you know, there's a certain spirit that's come out of people determined to go out and enjoy themselves, even though it is absolutely lashing rain. And they are there sitting outside under umbrellas with the rain dripping off the end of their noses by the look of it. But there we are. That's people determined to enjoy themselves.
I think that the rollout of the opening of premises and businesses and that is a little bit ahead there in Britain than it is with us. I think June is when they're hoping that some of our hospitality will be able to get back, and still there's a little uncertainty as to whether that will be outdoor dining or whether we will be able to have indoor dining in the coming months is not clarified yet. But I suppose the good news this week for those of us in church circles has been the fact that from tomorrow, the 10th of May, our churches can resume to have attendances at our celebrations of masses and services. And now there are some limitations, and really I suppose what it's doing is we're going back to what we had in place there in last autumn when our churches were open. So the capacity rule generally is like that 50 is the normal capacity for a lot of our churches, but for the larger churches they will be allowed to have pods of 50. So the church like Kilkee Church where I am, we will be able to accommodate more than 50 for our services. But again, in the whole rollout of all of this, I'm very conscious that, as was the case last autumn, it's so dependent on the willingness and the volunteerism of so many of our parishioners to act as stewards and to help us to put in place all the precautions that still need to be in place. And, you know, I think all our parishes are very grateful to all the people who in the background over the time, the months we have been online and that who have assisted us, our sacristans and singers that have come along and musicians to help at occasions like funerals or that. You know, we have been very much dependent upon those resources and that great volunteerism of people. But I think a lot of people are looking forward to moving back into church again and once again having that routine.
Yes.
You know, that will be spread, you know, obviously it's spread throughout the week in most parishes, and people are asked then maybe to opt for one of the scheduled masses that might be suitable to them if capacity allows that they will be able to attend.
Yeah, will you still be streaming services, Gerry?
We will. I think any parish that has put in streaming, they will continue to stream. Because in many ways, we have gained a new audience, particularly at times of funerals or anniversaries where people from overseas are able to join us. And, you know, that has been a great boost and, you know, a great comfort, I think, especially for any close family members, either on the occasion of a funeral or the occasion of an anniversary, that they are able to join from overseas and or even from up the country when we have restrictions in relation to travel and that. You know, it has been some bit of a consolation, and I think all churches that have the streaming will probably continue to do that, and you know, that will be a great boost. There's just one proviso in relation to the numberings that has been announced by the government, and that is in relation to funerals, that they're saying that there's an increased risk of transmission of the virus where families and communities come together following the death of a loved one. And therefore, the numbers at funeral services and weddings is going to be capped at 50, regardless of the size of the church. So, you know, while our normal services might in Kilkee here would be able to have capacity for more than 50, but for funeral times, all our churches are confined to a capacity of 50. And that seems to be related just to the fact of, you know, discouraging people from gathering too much and having too much contact in and around those funeral times and wedding times, you know.
What we're finding is that many elderly or sick people, members of our congregation, they still, even though the churches are open, they still are very reluctant and very unsure about coming to church. And so they are also benefiting, as well as people in far-flung places. It's our own people as well who don't feel quite ready to come back into church. They're still very cautious. Perhaps they're still shielding, you know. Perhaps they've got somebody in the family who's unwell and they don't want to risk it. And even though they may have had the vaccine, they're still, you know, it's going to take a long time before they've got confidence in being able to come back. And so it's good that, you know, we do keep streaming for that reason as well, really, and produce these hybrid services, we're calling them now.
Well, I think they're here to stay. That is one of the benefits maybe that has come out of COVID, and that churches had to move online with an online presence. And that's not going to be rolled back. I think, you know, once churches have invested in this, and that it is a means of great comfort and contact with people, as you say, who may not be able to come to church. And for those overseas, it's a definite connection and a great presence for people to have.
Yes, and it's been quite a steep learning curve, hasn't it? Getting to grips with Zoom, putting services on Zoom and also on Facebook Live. I pay credit to the priests that I know in Church of England and the Church of Ireland. And from a standing start, they very quickly got to grips with it, with some varying degrees of success. But now, you know, they're pretty efficient at it. One of them is particularly efficient. And in fact, he's produced services which RTE have broadcast, and that's the Reverend Kevin O'Brien in Ennis. And in fact, RTE have invited him and a band of parishioners to travel from Ennis to RTE in Donnybrook and record a service which will go out on RTE One. That's a few months away yet. But, you know, it's full credit to the skill and the ability that Kevin has to be able to put together videos. And he's very experienced at it now. And, you know, they are good enough for broadcast. And so all credit to him for that, I think.
One of the other outlines in the government announcement of last week concerns the whole thing of outdoor worship. Because as we move into the summer months, the tendency was, the custom in some parishes would be maybe to hold an outdoor service or mass, maybe around a cemetery or something like that. But at the moment, the guideline says that outdoor worship is not permitted in line with government restrictions on organised outdoor gatherings. So that still has to be allowed, and maybe over the coming months that restriction might be lifted somewhat.
Yeah, I think we are allowed to do outside, but one thing that still hasn't been relaxed here, and something I miss, is that we still can no longer sing in church. You know, we're not allowed to. You can have up to four people in a choir, so long as they're, you know, 2 metres apart and all the rest of it, and 4 metres from the nearest person in the congregation. But you don't realise how much you miss it, do you? You know, I haven't sung for over a year, I suppose, apart from maybe in the shower. I haven't sung at all. And, you know, that's something that has got to come back in, and hopefully it won't be too long before we can really fully worship and give praise in our churches. It's something that I've missed.
Yeah, I think that is also mentioned here, that, and again, that restriction is still there. As with previous reopenings, it says for religious services, congregational singing and choir singing is not permitted. Solo singing is, but as you say, with the restrictions and the guidelines there about the distance between the singer and the congregation and that. And that's simply, I think, because when we sing, we project our voice and therefore our breath and the possibility of the virus carrying from one person to another is increased. And it's for that reason.
Yeah, I can well understand it.
It's affected all sorts of singing and choral events in every dimension of life, and I think we've talked about that before, and the upsurge in virtual choirs, or people trying to get some experience of some sort of choral singing online, and all of that. You know, it's one of the dimensions that you say we're missing.
Yeah, singing is such an important part of our lives, really, isn't it? And I read in the paper a death of an opera singer with connections to Kilrush, Jerry.
That's right, the late Dr. Veronica Dunn. a tremendous presence, I think, in the world of opera and of singing all down through the years. And as you say, with particular connection to Kilrush, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But on early April, around the 9th or so of April, that the funeral took place in Dublin of the late Dr. Veronica Dunn, who was a tremendous presence among the whole world of opera and of singing, and would have spent a large portion of her 90 plus years just helping people and training them in singing. She was a marvellous character, you know, even when you'd hear her being interviewed on radio, that had tremendous stories, went to Italy to train as a singer in I think 1946, just after the war years, and was helped by the famous Father Flanagan over there as her chaperone, and, you know, studied with some of the greats and performed with some of the greats, including Joan Sutherland on stage in Covent Garden and other opera houses and that. But getting back to the Kilrush connection, in the 1950s, Kilrush Operatic Society used to stage an opera each year, and they used to invite some top soloists from Wales and England and Ireland to perform in the lead roles of the operas they would stage. And looking back through a little bit of research I did recently, on at least two occasions anyway, Veronica Dunn was one of the invited guest soloists to perform in their opera season there. And so she would have been, you know, a presence there in the Mar Cinema in Kilrush, where the operas were held in the late 1950s.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's well before my time of being in Kilrush, but I know Frances remembers being in there as a teenager, you know, listening to bands and things in there. And the Operatic Society was a very big thing, wasn't it? They had these people coming, you know, stars of opera coming to a place like Kilrush. It was amazing. I don't think it ever made any money, Jerry, did it?
That I'm not sure of. There's a little funny story with myself involved in relation to that. I remember in the 1980s when I was working in Kilrush. At that time, RTE Radio were travelling around the country and broadcasting. If it was the genesis of local radio, really, where they would come to a town and for a week they would broadcast from that town, so that the people in that area, we'll say in the West Clare area, would be able to pick it up on the from their transmitters. And so the town had to organise, if you like, programmes for the week that they were going to broadcast. And this mobile studio came and was parked up at the square in Kilrush. And I was given the task of trying to produce a programme that reflected on the years of the opera in Kilrush. And there were still, you know, a lot of the people that were involved from Kilrush were still around there at that time. And we did some interviews with them and talked about the season of opera that had been there. But it was the days of LPs, and while I had lined up and researched everything and scripted everything, Stephen, I remember we were going live and we were talking about the operas, and I was actually talking about the career of Veronica Dunn and her presence at the Kilrush operas, and did this marvellous introduction, or had it written out anyway, to Veronica Dunn singing Scenes That Are Brightest from Maritana. And whatever way the producer, that time there was a producer on the programme, whatever way the producer had placed the LP on the turntable, it was the wrong side of the LP. So instead of Veronica Dunn singing what I had introduced, we heard her singing something else. So we panicked because it was live, and we sort of faded it down, and I had then to ad lib and try and say a few words to rescue it while the LP was being turned over and the right track being played. So that's my memory, particular memory of association with Veronica Dunn.
Yeah.
But she has, in recent times as well, there was a very good, strong Kilrush connection with Veronica Dunn, because the young Idel O'Brien, the singer from Kilrush, was trained by Veronica Dunn in the late 1980s and into the 90s, and used to travel to Dublin as a youngster to receive training from Veronica Monica done in her early career.
Yeah, and Adele has sung in St. Columba's in Ennis on more than one occasion.
So maybe, Stephen, it would be fitting, I think, to honour the memory of Veronica Dunn and what we've been talking about, maybe to play a track from one of her recordings, and may she rest in peace. I know her good work goes before her and will be fondly remembered by many people. And for all those maybe who might have remembered the time of opera in the Mar Cinema in Kilrush, and maybe the presence of Veronica Dunn and others, maybe we could play Veronica singing Scenes That Are Brightest from Maritana.
And I'll make sure it's on the right way up, Jerry.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye, Jerry. Bye.
Bye.
Today, a blessing for all the young people of the Killaloe Diocese was launched on the Killaloe Diocesan website and social media. In this next interview, we speak with Aisling Clark from Tulla, who is a student in UCC. In the interview, Aisling tells us all about this special blessing for young people. You have been involved in the creation of a blessing for all young people in the Killaloe Diocese. Can you tell me about it, Aisling?
Yeah, sure. So there's a blessing for all young people, that's primary school pupils, secondary school students and college students, which was launched today at 12 p.m. It was recorded in three different locations. We had the Cistercian College in Roscrea, the Star of the Sea Church and on the seashore in Quilty, and in Westburn, the home of Bishop Fintan Monaghan in Innes, and St. Flannan's College in Innes also.
And so this is a blessing, as you say, for young children, for teenagers, for your own age. And what kind of format does it take?
Well, it takes the format of a liturgy, and there's music, singing. There's a reading read by a student in the Cistercian College in Roscrea. There's prayers read by a child hoping to receive the sacrament of confirmation this year, and a secondary school student and a college student. And Father John O'Gomara sets the tone in the beginning by leading us in a meditation. Then there's a blessing from the seashore in Quilty. We have a scene in Innes where Bishop Fintan is passing on the flame of faith to five representatives from the Innes secondary schools. There's a common theme throughout where a candle is passed from one person to another in all the scenes. And the candle is representing the light within all of us, reminding us of our light and to allow us to let our lights burn brightly.
It sounds really comprehensive, Aisling. So how will people access it or see it? Is it going to be on the radio or what?
So it'll be available on the diocesan website from today, Sunday the 9th of May. It's being made available to all schools throughout the diocese, and it will be available on the diocesan social media, including Bishop Fintan's social media.
Very good. So it's available in lots of places. And it sounds like, you know, it's really wide and varied. There's all sorts of things in it, and there's scenes from Tipperary, from different parts of Clare. What's your own role in it, Aisling, or how did you get involved?
So as a Mehel leader is how I got involved, and I was playing music and I was reading the Prayers of the Faithful as a college student.
Okay, and how many of you play music in it?
There's three of us, myself and Sarah and Arlene.
Okay, and you're traditional music players, you have a great love of traditional music.
Yeah, for sure.
What's your own musical instrument?
I play the fiddle.
You play the fiddle, okay. And you're from the parish of Tulla, Aisling.
Yeah, proud Tulla woman.
Very good. Well, so you should be. And our fellow presenter here, as you know, is Father Brendan Quinlivan, your parish priest. And I know that you have beautiful music in the church of Tulla, and you're also involved in that.
Yeah, I am part of the choir and I play a bit of the fiddle with them as well, so...
And even, how has it been, you know, have you had any opportunities to be part of the choir during COVID?
So we've had very small, maybe one or two singers in the church at one time for Mass. So I've been lucky to be able to go a couple of times in the last few months. So that's nice.
Okay. And I believe there was some Taizé music played at Easter time in the parish. Is that right?
Yeah, on Good Friday night we had a Taizé prayer around the cross, and that was really nice.
Yeah, it's a beautiful style of music. What had you to do for that?
I was singing and I was playing the fiddle as well. I was lucky enough to be in Taizé about 2 years ago, and so I really enjoyed that.
So it has even more significance for you after being to Taizé. Very special place to visit. On that note, you know, what was it about Taizé that struck a chord with you, Aisling?
I really like the style of the prayers over there, how it's all done through song, and obviously because I'm taken to music, and it was a great community feeling over there. I really enjoyed how everyone just came together, and just felt like everyone belonged there, and it was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very unique. It's almost really difficult to describe. I'm lucky enough to have been there as well, so I know what you're trying to describe, and it's almost something that you have to experience, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
It's great to know that everyone there is okay with being Christian, and it's really lovely that they're all from different Christian denominations throughout the whole world, you know, so your mind is broadened when you meet the different Christian churches from across the world, and yet to know that you all have faith in common is beautiful, and the expression of the faith through song is really, really special then.
Yeah.
And I think nearly one of the nicest sounds out there is the sound of the bells when they ring out the call to prayer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Can you remember it, that sound?
Yeah. Yeah, I sure can.
Well, we've got a bit sidetracked there talking to Taisy about Taisy. We didn't expect to be talking about that. So, Aisling, you are a first-year student in University College Cork. Can you tell us about your studies and what it has been like being a first-year student in Ireland this year?
Yeah, well, I'm studying maths and Irish with education in UCC, and it definitely hasn't been a typical first year experience, I would say, doing college from my bedroom in Tulla. But I've met a few people over Zoom and things, so we're hoping that we'll all get to meet and have a proper experience next year.
Mm-hmm. And did you begin the college year from home in Tulla, or did you go down to Cork?
I went down to Cork for a few weeks because it seemed at the time like I was going to have lectures and things in person. However, that's not how it ended up turning out, and I came home after about 3 weeks. But even when I was down there, the restrictions were fairly tight, so I couldn't meet anyone, and I didn't know anyone anyway in the first place. So
And it was. And what has the experience of learning been like then online for you?
I've actually found it okay. It's easy to concentrate when I'm just at home, and I really like my subjects, so
that helps.
That's kind of the big difference from secondary school. I don't have to do subjects that I don't particularly want to do. I just focus on the ones that I really, really like. So,
yeah, very good. And from a social point of view, what has it been like?
Well, hasn't been much going on in the social life, but I'm lucky that I'm on a small course, so there's a few of us that have managed to have regular enough calls on Zoom and try to get to know each other that way.
And is it true to say, is this the experience of many young people, they have met people online who you haven't actually met physically yet?
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say that's most people's experience this year, which is strange, but I'm sure it'll feel very normal when we do get to meet.
I'd say it'll be a great feeling when you get to meet those friends in real little. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
great. So you mentioned at the start that you're one of the Meha leaders, and we've had Meha leaders on our programme here on Beyond Belief on a few occasions now, so our listeners will be familiar with it, that you volunteer to become leaders to younger, to transition years. Sadly, during COVID-19, that week away with the transition years didn't occur. But when you heard about this opportunity, Aisling, to become a Meha leader, why did you say yes to it?
Well, I had some friends last year and the year before that were involved as Meha leaders, and it just seemed like such a fun and uplifting sort of a community. And so I got involved by going to Sullis at the end of 2019, and there were Meha leaders there, I think, at the at the time, and we just had great fun, and it all kind of went from there. And it's been really nice to be involved in it, even though we haven't been able to meet in person and everything this year. It's been nice to have a few online things, and I think there's great anticipation of when we can finally all get together.
Yes, good, good. And the faith element, Aisling, what does that mean to you?
Well, obviously it's very important, and it's what this is all founded on. And I think it's great to kind of connect with other young people that have the same faith, and to be able to express that in a youthful and fun way.
Very good. A way that appeals to you as young people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. So can you remind us again, Aisling, about this blessing for young people, what it is, where it's available? Just remind us once again.
Yeah, so it's a blessing for all young people that involves music and singing and readings, and it will be available on the Diocesan website and on the Diocesan social media as well.
Aisling, we know that you're in the middle of your exams at the moment in UCC, so thank you so much for taking the time out to tell us about the blessing, and we wish you all the luck in the world with your exams.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Oh, misty eye of the mountain below, keep careful watch of my brother's souls. And should the sky be filled with fire and smoke, keep watching over during suns. If this is to end in fire, then we shall all burn together. Watch the flames climb high into the night, calling out, Father, oh, stand by and we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. High. And if we should die tonight, we should all die. Raise a glass of wine for the last time, calling out, Father, oh, prepare as we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees, and I see fire hollow in soul. I see fire blood in the breeze, and I hope that you remember. To the flame, calling out, Father, oh, hold fast and we will watch the flames burn up and on the mountainside. Desolation comes upon the sky. Now I see fire inside the mountain. I see fire burning the trees, and I see fire hollow in soul. I see fire blood in the breeze, and I hope that you remember me. And if the night
And that was I See Fire by Ed Sheeran. And it was the choice of Aisling Clark from Tulla, who was the interview guest of Joanne O'Brien.
Beyond Belief. on Clare FM.
You are tuned to Clare FM on this Sunday night. And one of the things, of course, that's happening in these coming days that is a cause of great joy and excitement for all of us is the resumption of public worship and also the ability to travel beyond the borders of our own county. And one of the places that I imagine will be getting new and extra visitors in the coming week is the International Marian and Eucharistic Shrine at Knock, which is less than 2 hours away from us here in County Clare. And I'm delighted to be joined on the line tonight by Father Richard Gibbons, the rector of the Shrine at Knock. Good evening to you, Father Richard.
Good evening, Father Brendan. Thanks very much for having me.
One of the things since we were speaking the last time on the programme is that the status of Knock has changed in the sense that you were given a new title. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Father Richard?
Now, from the outset, it mightn't, your listeners might sort of say, well, so what, didn't we think that it was that anyway? And they would be right. We had canonical status of the shrine itself needed to be regularised, and Archbishop Michael Neary made a request then for the standing of the shrine to become an international shrine. So he made that request to Rome, to the Pontifical Council for the Promotion of the New Evangelisation, a big long title there, but that's the congregation that all the shrines of the world come under. So the representation was accepted, and then progress moved quite swiftly, actually, and the Pope gave his approval. What it actually just means, really, is that the shrine itself is looked on as being open to welcoming visitors from right across the world. We are the national shrine for Ireland, but the international status puts us on a lot of calendars, a lot of people's radar, okay, if you like, in terms of visiting Marian shrines. And it's the ultimate, I think, it's the ultimate vote of approval for any shrine, indeed, right across the world.
And, of course, like all of us, from tomorrow, you are reopening for public worship. While we're still under restrictions and limitations, that must have big implications for an operation like you have in Knock.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. You're quite right. We're all excited about it because it's great to have people. Like, a shrine really is the shrine unless people are coming and people are visiting. So we have basically the plan that we had for last year, because we're treating this summer exactly like last summer for all intents and purposes. But we're expecting quite a lot of people to visit and to return because of their faith, number one, but also because other people might be curious in terms of the shrine itself from our online presence, and because of the staycation element that not people in the country won't be travelling abroad really this summer either. Our plans are fairly straightforward, but they're all the elements that we had last year in terms of people's protection, and also to make it as easy for people to visit and to attend Mass as possible. There'll still be the requirements of the distancing, the mask wearing, of course, and in the capacity for the basilica, which will be 200. So we'll be able to have 200 people in pods, four pods of 50, for our three masses in the day.
And are all of the facilities in Knock going to be open with effect from tomorrow? Places like the Blessed Sacrament Chapel, the Apparition Chapel, the availability of the Sacrament of Reconciliation, which Knock is a great centre of as well.
That's right. All of those elements will be open tomorrow. The bookshop and the mass card offices won't be, because they're retail elements, so they have to be in line with the opening up of retail. But that's just a week later on the 17th. So they'll be open from the 17th. But Reconciliation Chapel, confessions, masses, all of that will be open. And we're just looking forward to welcoming people back.
And of course, there are still restrictions in terms of things like hotels and hospitality and B&B. So for the moment, for the time being, it will be largely people coming on a kind of a day trip, if you like, that there won't be places open to stay, as I understand it, at the moment.
That's right. That's correct. Or places to eat, indeed, apart from takeaway. That's correct. But already, St. Mary's here, and our hotel Bookings for St. Mary's later in the summer are going extremely strongly. The number of inquiries are extraordinary. As soon as the notice was given by the government that we'd be opening up and back to masses, there were the phone was hopping there in terms of people coming. So there is a pent up base there that of people that really wish to come and stay. Now our hotel will be opened later in June. Knockhouse Hotel will be open towards the end of June, and St. Mary's will be open possibly from the 2nd of June, because that's the date that's given to hospitality. So we'll be all in line with those current restrictions or those current openings as well. So we're looking forward to that as well.
Now, the other, you sort of alluded to it there a little moment ago when we were talking, that this summer will be a lot like last summer. Does that have implications then for things like diocesan pilgrimages and different groups? Because I know you've already started some of those in the virtual way.
That's right. It will have implications, because let's take a Sunday, for example. Let's take Killaloe. Obviously, Bishop Fintan will be able to come because there's inter-county travel now. So he will come and lead that. But on the Sunday, when we have our normal pilgrim mass at 3 o'clock in the Basilica, while he'll be the main celebrant and the homilist and all the rest of it, people from Killaloe can come, but they'll have to be restricted to the number, queue up like everybody else and get in, if you know what I mean. You won't have masses of people coming from Killaloe, but or indeed of priests either.
But of course, the good news, Richard, is that the great leaps forward you've made in terms of social media and online presence, that is not going to go away because you're reopening.
That's right. That's correct. So people can still join in online. And that will still be part and parcel of all the pilgrimages and indeed of the masses going forward.
And of course, the great feature of the year in Knock is the great solemn novena each year. How is that going to unfold this year, or have you been even thinking in terms of that yet?
Oh, we have indeed, because we have to line up our speakers as well. We will be going ahead with the novena. We didn't last year because obviously there was no vaccine, and we didn't want to take the chance of thousands of people just turning up. This year, we will be going ahead with the novena. We'll see how the restrictions maybe are lifted. So that's towards the end of August, of course. And from sources, they're saying that things might be loosened up a little bit more at that stage. Well, we'll see how that goes. But we will be having the novena, and we will be having guest speakers, and we will be notifying everybody how that will be planned out and what will happen once we get into the summer, once we come nearer August.
We spoke a little bit at the beginning about how the status of Knock Shrine was reaffirmed as an international Marian and Eucharistic shrine, and you had a beautiful celebration at which our Holy Father Pope Francis spoke. And in that context, Pope Francis has made a very special appeal for the month of May for what he calls a marathon of prayer, and I understand that our shrine at Knock is part of that in the coming days in a special way.
That's right, and I think that's one of the benefits of actually the status being recognised as an international Eucharistic Marian shrine, is that these things will be now happening even more, which is great for the shrine and a great honour for the country. So during the month of May, Pope Francis has designated 30 shrines across the world to take one day in terms of prayer, morning prayer, a rosary at 5 o'clock Irish time, a rosary in the evening, and then conclude with night prayer later on that evening. So the rosary would be televised on Vatican Television and our own Facebook page and also our own website right across.
And that's happening tomorrow, Monday the 10th, I understand.
That's happening Monday the 10th, exactly tomorrow, Monday the 10th at 5 o'clock Irish time. So if your listeners want to join in, they're more than welcome to do so. 5 p.m. Irish time, 6 o'clock Rome time. Archbishop Michael Leary will preside at the rosary. It'll be about maybe 40-45 minutes. That's what we've been given. There's special dedications for each evening. So our dedication are for people with any kind of disability.
If we think about it and we think of the story of the apparitions at Knock and the time they happened in our history in the midst of the land wars and after the famine, it really is an appropriate place, I think, in these pandemic times, in another time of crisis, but this time a global crisis, for Knock to be at the heart of whatever marathon of prayer that the Pope has asked for in the month of May.
Yes, it does tie into that, because the numbers of people that kind of that are very anxious about the future now, Brendan, as you well know, you know, like even their very jobs, their livelihoods, what's going to happen, how is the country going to pay back all this money, etc., etc. All of these things can become a worry now once people are getting vaccinated. And in the midst of worries and crises, even for ourselves personally, we always need someone or some place to go to. And in terms of our faith, which is so important to us, that keeps us going, we turn to the Lord, we turn to Our Lady. And in this year of St. Joseph, we turn to St. Joseph as well, of course. But I think not provides that sacred space for people just to take a little bit of time out, kind of feel, okay, it might be an anxious time, worrying time, but it's not all going to, it's not going to continue like this forever. There is hope, there is light, and working together, we can see it through.
Well, Father Richard, I know that you have busy weeks and days ahead of you, particularly as you prepare to welcome back probably slightly greater numbers of pilgrims than you have been used to so far this season. Can we wish you every blessing and joy and a wonderful season of prayer, particularly with the upcoming events? And can we ask you maybe to light a candle in Knock for all of us here in Clare as we look forward to visiting you again soon?
Well, thank you, Brendan, for that. And thanks for having me on. And I certainly will. It's the first thing I'll do this evening. I'll do that. That very thing for the great diocese of Killaloe and for the people. And and thank you so much. And please, God, we'll see you maybe over the course of the season itself.
Well, with the help of God, it's never far away from us. And thank you so much for joining us tonight, Richard.
And that was Spring from Vivaldi's Four Seasons, played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And it's bringing us to the end of our programme here on Clare FM. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and we look forward to being with you again next week. This is the hymn, The Day Thou Gavest, Lord, Is Ended, and it's sung by the Marlborough College Choir. Thank you. Lighten our darkness, we beseech thee, O Lord, and by thy great mercy, defend us from all perils and dangers of this night. May the road rise up to meet you. May the wind always be at your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face, the rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Amen. Slán agus beannacht.